Right. So imagine walking into a room, just a massive room filled with like 200 of the smartest, highest paid AI engineers on the planet.
Right, a pretty intimidating crowd, to say the least.
Very. And you look them dead in the eye and you tell them that the life's work they are currently building is actively destroying human creativity.
Yeah.
And that is literally exactly what happened this week.
It was a genuinely stunning moment, especially when you consider that the person delivering this message was specifically invited to do so by the leadership of that very company.
Right. We are talking about Dave Eggers, the acclaimed author, walking straight into the headquarters of OpenAI. And today, that confrontation is the jumping-off point for our deep dive.
It's a great place to start.
We are pulling from the July 19th edition of the Tekken Morning Newsletter, which, if you haven't read it, is this incredible curation of what is actually happening beneath the surface of the tech industry.
Yeah, they always find the really interesting mechanics behind the headlines.
Exactly. So our mission today is to decode those mechanics, because if you are listening to this, you're probably feeling it already. The tech world is fundamentally shifting gears right now. It's midsummer, July 2026, which is usually, super quiet in Silicon Valley.
Crickets, usually.
Right. But tensions have just hit a boiling point. The era of limitless exponential growth and like free digital handouts,
Yeah.
that's over.
There really is. We are firmly entering an era of stabilization, which really means extraction.
Yes. And over the next few minutes, we are going to explore how this shift is directly targeting you. We're talking about the hidden costs of our digital lives today, the loss of control over your cognitive development, your privacy, and ultimately your wallet.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it, because the overarching theme here really is agency, like who is making the choices for you? And that brings us right back to that room at OpenAI, which perfectly illustrates this whole battle for our cognitive agency.
So let's get into the mechanics of what Eggers actually argued.
Yeah.
Because he didn't just stand up and give a generic, AI is bad speech, right? He was very specific.
He introduced this concept, this specific mechanism called cognitive friction.
Yeah, cognitive friction. And to understand why his critique was so blistering to these engineers, you really have to understand this concept. So cognitive friction is that essential, sometimes really painful struggle that a human being goes through to articulate a thought.
Like staring at a blank page.
Exactly. If you have ever stared at a blinking cursor, typed a sentence, deleted the whole thing, and tried again because it didn't quite capture what you meant, that is cognitive
It's a
friction.
mental wrestling match.
Right. And Eggers' core argument was that this struggle isn't just like an annoying hurdle that needs to be optimized away by a tech company. The struggle is the actual process of thinking.
Wow.
When you wrestle with syntax and vocabulary, you are simultaneously shaping your own internal beliefs. So by removing that friction, by letting ChatGPT instantly generate this, highly polished, perfectly structured essay, you aren't just saving a student time. You're amputating their ability to discover their own voice.
You're silencing them.
You're effectively silencing the original thought process of an entire generation, or maybe two.
I used to compare this to lifting weights at the gym, right? Like, if a machine lifts the weight for you, your muscles atrophy. You get weak.
That makes sense.
But honestly, after reading this, I think a better way to look at it is like relying exclusively on GPS
Oh,
navigation.
yeah, that's a great analogy.
Because if you stare at a blue dot on your phone every single time you drive, you never build a mental map of your own city. You become completely dependent on the device to just orient you in the physical world. So I guess the provocative question here is, are these large language models an exoskeleton helping us lift heavier concepts? Or are we like strapping our brains into a wheelchair that will eventually make us forget how to walk on our own?
The GPS analogy is incredibly apt because it highlights the hidden cost of convenience,
Yeah.
And what makes this whole event so fascinating is the profound irony of it happening inside OpenAI.
Right, invited by Sam Altman himself.
Exactly. It represents a massive internal crisis for them because the engineers sitting in that audience, they genuinely believe they're building tools for human empowerment,
Yeah.
but they are hitting this philosophical wall.
Line between helping and replacing.
Yes, the tech industry is currently desperate to find the precise, almost mathematical line between assisting human thought and replacing it. When a teenager relies on editing AI-generated outputs instead of drafting their own original thoughts from scratch, the neural pathways responsible for structuring complex, long-form arguments just They simply do not develop.
And the fact that they invited Eggers to say this to their faces suggests that maybe, just maybe, they are starting to panic about what they've actually built.
Oh, they're definitely grappling with it.
But this loss of internal agency, you know, the outsourcing of our thinking, that is really only half the battle today. Because while we're worried about the internal cognitive development of the next generation, tech companies are simultaneously grappling with how to monitor their external safety. And that transitions us perfectly into the tension surrounding OpenAI's controversial new privacy policy.
Yeah, this is a huge shift. The scrutiny on tech companies regarding child safety has reached a global boiling point. And OpenAI has just implemented a really drastic shift in how they handle users under the age of 18.
Yeah, if you haven't seen this yet, here is the new policy. It's wild. If a teenage user's account is suspended for a severe rule violation, meaning their safety algorithms catch them trying to generate violent, illegal, or highly inappropriate content, OpenAI is no longer just banning the account.
No, they're taking it a step further.
They are going to send a direct automated email to the teenager's parents or legal guardians.
It is a radical, radical departure from their previous stance on user anonymity.
Totally.
But we should probably clarify the mechanism here, just to be precise. This isn't like a live surveillance feed being piped directly to a parent's phone.
Right. They aren't reading every message.
Exactly. Normal, everyday interactions, asking for math homework help or, you know, brainstorming ideas for a school project, those remain entirely private. The parental notification is a tripwire.
Okay.
It is only activated when the internal safety parameters detect a genuine severe threat. So they are trying to walk this very delicate tightrope between privacy and safety.
I have to be honest, though, I am highly skeptical of how this actually plays out in reality.
Really? How so?
Let's just think about the psychology of a teenager for a second. An AI chat window feels almost like a confessional booth.
Oh, sure.
It's highly intimate, it doesn't judge you, and it feels completely private. So if teens know there is a tripwire that might suddenly tattle on them to their parents, aren't they just going to abandon the platform entirely?
That is the big concern, yeah.
It seems like this surveillance risk would totally backfire. Like, it would drive them straight toward unverified, maybe open source AI tools on the dark web, where there are literally zero guardrails for their embarrassing or sensitive questions.
Well, your intuition is completely backed up by the sociological data we saw in the newsletter.
Really?
Yeah. Following the Eggers speech and the announcement of these policy shifts, the global search volume for the exact phrase AI privacy spiked by 90%.
Whoa. A 90% spike.
90%. That is a massive behavioral indicator.
I mean, that implies widespread panic.
It implies a sudden violent shattering of that false sense of intimacy you just described. Users suddenly woke up and remembered, oh, right, there's a massive corporation reading over my shoulder.
Right.
But you have to look at the broader context, the legal and financial mechanisms forcing OpenAI's hand here. Tech giants are being absolutely squeezed right now by an avalanche of lawsuits worldwide from parents and regulators.
Demanding safer environments.
Exactly. They are demanding secure digital environments for minors. So OpenAI is essentially attempting to reduce its own legal liability. The courts are forcing these platforms to prioritize verifiable safety over providing a non-judgmental exploration space for youth.
Which means the company is choosing financial self-preservation over user privacy.
That's exactly what's happening. And, you know, this tightening of control isn't just happening with user behavior and data. It's happening with user wallets, too.
Yes. And here is where it gets really interesting. Because choosing financial self-preservation is exactly what is driving the new monetization strategies of Apple and Google. We've talked about losing our cognitive agency and our privacy. Now let's talk about the financial squeeze.
The squeeze is real.
The era of the free lunch in Silicon Valley is dead and buried. Apple and Google are quietly but, like, very aggressively changing the rules of their ecosystems.
The changes are subtle if you aren't paying close attention, but the compounding financial impact on the average user is just immense.
Let's look at the mechanics of it. Apple is quietly hiking prices across the board for their software services. Apple One, iCloud storage tiers, they're all going up. They're even bumping up the costs for out-of-warranty hardware repairs.
Yeah, every little thing costs more.
And meanwhile, Google is pulling an almost identical move. For years, Android users have enjoyed infinite free cloud backups for their basic device data. But Google just announced that your device settings, your text messages, and your call histories will now count against your free 15 gigabyte quota.
Which is a fundamental shift in how they operate. Mm-hmm. Previously, only heavy media-like, you know, photos and 4K videos counted against your storage limit. System backups were considered a fundamental free part of the Android experience.
It's insidious. It isn't like moving into a luxury hotel where the room was cheap and then suddenly being charged by the minute just to use the elevator.
Right.
It's worse. Apple and Google's ecosystems are like a spider web. Every photo you back up to iCloud, every password Google saves for you, every shared calendar you set up with your family, that is another thread wrapping around you. By the time they hike the prices, you are so tangled up in the web that leaving would mean losing a decade of your digital history. So, I mean, if they keep squeezing us, why don't people just pack up and leave?
Well, they can't. And the term for this web-building strategy is enshittification.
Enshittification. I love that word.
It's perfect, right? Mm-hmm. It was coined by the author Cory Doctorow in the newsletter Source. And it describes this classic market pattern, the inevitable life cycle of a dominant platform. It happens in three distinct phases.
Okay, lay them out for us.
Phase one. The platform offers amazing, frictionless free services to lock in users. They hook you.
Right.
Phase two. Once the users are locked in, the platform changes the rules to lock in business customers and advertisers.
Makes sense.
And then phase three. Mm. Once both groups are completely dependent on the platform, they degrade the freebies and raise prices to extract maximum profit for their shareholders.
So we are firmly in phase three, harvest time.
Precisely.
Yeah.
We really have to examine the macroeconomics driving this harvest. Mm. Like, why is this happening right now in July 2026?
Why now?
Because the underlying architecture of the tech economy has stalled. Think about hardware. Smartphone upgrade cycles used to be, what, 2 years?
Yeah, everybody got a new phone every 2 years.
Now, consumers are holding onto their phones for 4 or even 5 years. So hardware sales are flatlining. At the same time, semiconductor inflation is rampant. And maintaining the server infrastructure to house billions of text messages, combined with the astronomically expensive R&D for things like Apple Intelligence, it's draining their cash reserve.
Oh, wow. So because they can't convince you to buy a new $1,200 phone every 2 years anymore, they have to extract that same amount of money from you slowly, month by month, just to let you keep your old text messages.
Exactly. Recurring subscription services have become the vital artery for these tech giants. It's the only way to satisfy the market's demand for infinite growth when physical sales plateau.
Okay, but this makes a marketing campaign I saw from T-Mobile this week look completely insane.
Oh, the free iPhone thing.
Yes. While Apple and Google are tightening the screws and charging for gigabytes of text messages, T-Mobile is out here aggressively offering the brand new iPhone 17 completely for free.
Yeah, it is a massive billboard campaign, and it seems entirely counterintuitive to the extraction phase we literally just discussed.
Let me break down the predicted specs of this phone, because it makes a free offer even more confusing. The iPhone 17 is rumored to feature a 2-nanometer A19 Pro chip.
Which is incredibly advanced.
Right. A nanometer is insanely small. We are talking about the distance between billions of transistors on a single piece of silicon.
Mm-hmm.
Shrinking that architecture to 2 nanometers means data travels faster, uses significantly less power, and generates less heat. You desperately need that kind of thermal efficiency if you want to run on-device Apple Intelligence Gen 2 without melting your battery.
Exactly. It's a powerhouse.
Add in a 120Hz LTPO OLED display, a 48-megapixel telephoto camera. I mean, you are looking at a hyper-premium $1,000 piece of cutting-edge hardware. So nobody just gives away a $1,000 piece of hardware.
Right.
Where's the trapdoor here for the consumer? Are they just desperate?
Not even close. It is a highly calculated financial equation built around a metric called customer lifetime value, or LTV. To understand the trapdoor, you have to dissect the trade-in and switch model and look at the telecom market in 2026. The 5G rollout is completely saturated. Everyone who wants a 5G connection already has one.
So there are no new customers to find?
Exactly. The pie isn't getting any bigger. So the only way a carrier like T-Mobile can grow its revenue is by cannibalizing customers from AT&T and Verizon. It's actually a return to the 2010 era subsidies. To convince you to go through the massive friction of switching carriers, they are willing to take a $1,000 hit up front by handing you that iPhone 17.
But they aren't actually losing money in the long run.
No, because the fine print is where the extraction happens. To get the free device, you have to trade in your old flagship phone, which they refurbish and sell. But more importantly, you are legally bound to a mandatory 24 to 36 month contract on their most expensive top tier unlimited data plan.
Oh, I see.
Let's say that plan is $90 a month. Over 36 months, you are paying them over $3,200. The customer lifetime value generated over the life of that contract easily eclipses the initial subsidy of the hardware.
So the free cutting edge phone is literally just a Trojan horse. It is a shiny lure designed to trap you in a 3-year marriage with an inflated data plan.
That's the trapdoor.
It all comes back to the same theme. In a world of fake free offers designed to remove your financial agency, you think you are getting a deal, but you are just volunteering to be harvested.
The mechanisms of control are very sophisticated, You know, whether it is iCloud storage limits or telecom contracts.
Which is why I am so thrilled that our source material includes a true palate cleanser this week, because amidst all this shitification and fake free hardware, there is actually one corner of the tech world offering something of immense value with zero strings attached.
It really is a fascinating pivot from the corporate strategies we just dismantled.
If you are a PC gamer, you need to open Steam right now, because the critically acclaimed indie RPG, The Life and Suffering of Sir Bronte, is currently 100% free.
Such a good game.
And I don't mean a free trial. I don't mean a game gutted by microtransactions or subscription traps. The full base game is completely free to claim and keep forever. And I have to geek out about this game's mechanics for a second, because it ties so beautifully into what we discussed at the very beginning with Dave Eggers.
Yeah, the thematic parallels here are actually quite striking.
This game is a dark fantasy, choose-your-own-adventure narrative. You play a character from the moment of their birth to their old age. But what makes it a masterpiece is how heavy and permanent the choices are.
Right, there's no going back.
Exactly. Every single decision you make, whether to rebel against the empire, how to treat your family, what career to pursue, it strictly dictates your fate. The game forces you into the exact kind of cognitive friction that Eggers was defending.
Yeah.
While AI companies are trying to make every choice in our lives frictionless and thoughtless, this deep narrative indie game proves that the friction, the struggle of making a difficult choice with permanent consequences, is exactly where the meaning comes from. It separates it from those repetitive, big-budget blockbusters.
It is a profound contrast. You have a massive tech giant trying to eliminate friction to extract data, and an indie game studio leaning heavily into friction to create art.
But we shouldn't ignore the business analysis here either.
Right, because they still need to make money.
Exactly. The studio giving this game away isn't just acting out of charity. It is a masterclass in smart marketing. It's a highly effective loss leader strategy.
Wait, so what is their angle? If there are no microtransactions, how do they keep the lights on?
By giving away the base game, which, by the way, already boasts a very positive rating, they are intentionally engineering a viral moment. Games with branching narratives and heavy player choices generate massive word-of-mouth marketing.
People want to talk about what happened in their playthrough.
Exactly. By making the base game free, the developers completely remove the barrier to entry. They are sacrificing immediate revenue to go viral and build a massive, fiercely loyal fan base overnight ahead of unannounced sequels or DLCs.
So they are building an audience they can actually trust. Precisely. It is a stark, refreshing contrast to the inshittification model discussed earlier. They are providing value first, knowing that financial support will follow naturally from a dedicated fan base.
It is a genuinely refreshing strategy. Go grab it while you can, because experiencing a world where your choices actually matter feels like a luxury right now.
It really does.
So what does this all mean? We have covered a massive amount of ground today. We started with Dave Eggers warning us that outsourcing our thoughts to AI will destroy our cognitive independence. We looked at how OpenAI is navigating the terrifying legal tightrope of monitoring teenagers' most intimate digital conversations. We untangled the spiderweb of Apple and Google's ecosystem price hikes, and we decoded the financial trapdoor behind T-Mobile's free iPhone.
It's a lot, and the through line is unmistakable. We are living in a moment where the cost of existing in the digital world is rising rapidly, while the ethical and cognitive implications of the tools we use are getting much heavier.
Yeah, and the market definitely feels it. The newsletter includes a market sentiment thermometer, and right now, the tech industry sentiment is sitting at a fear and caution index of 45 out of 100.
Wow.
For an industry that historically runs on unbridled utopian optimism, a 45 is freezing cold. Investors and users alike are deeply anxious about these price hikes and the encroaching surveillance of these AI models.
It is a chilly environment. But, you know, I want to leave you with a historical perspective to chew on.
Okay, let's hear it.
When you look back at historical trends in technology, the initial resistance to massive paradigm shifts almost always fades. Think back to the sheer panic and outrage when smartphone manufacturers decided to remove the physical headphone jack.
Oh man, I remember the think pieces. People were furious. It seemed disastrous.
They swore they would never buy a phone without one. And today, the lack of a headphone jack is completely normalized. It barely registers as an inconvenience. The source material makes this deeply unsettling point. If today's restrictions are tomorrow's standards, human beings have a terrifying capacity to adapt to the loss of their own agency.
Wow. That is a haunting thought to end on. If today's restrictions become tomorrow's standards, what fundamental piece of our digital freedom or our cognitive independence are we complaining about today that we will completely blindly accept as normal by this time next year?
Right. When the AI is writing all of our emails, managing our subscriptions, and reporting our behavior to our parents or the authorities, will we even remember the cognitive friction we lost?
It is something to seriously consider the next time you find yourself staring at a blinking cursor. Tempted to just let the algorithm finish the sentence for you. The struggle is the point. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, read the fine print on those free offers, and above all, keep questioning the hidden mechanics of the technology you use every single day. We will catch you next time.